From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel. After a run of 27 years, the Concorde took its last hop across the pond today, flying from New York to London in 3.5 hours, about as much time as it takes to go from New York to Boston via Amtrak. A few years ago, producer Steve Paley boiled the experience down to a few minutes, and we distilled it to the essential minute and a half.
British Airways Concorde supersonic flight BA001, now boarding at the far end of this lounge.
Our estimated flight time today is 3 hours 17 minutes. Our cruising speed will be 1,350 miles per hour, which is over twice the speed of sound.
I'd like to explain to those of you who have not flown in Concorde before that we use our full engine power for takeoff with all the reheats going. We adjust the power quite sharply several times for noise abatement purposes. And we will not be accelerating through into supersonic flight until we approach Nantucket Island. And we're approaching Nantucket Island now. We're already up to 98% of the speed of sound, and I'm actually lifting the nose of the aeroplane. We're going to start climbing at about 2,000 feet a minute as we accelerate through the sound barrier. And now we're coming just to Mach 1. Notice there isn't a ripple on the aeroplane as we go through the sound barrier into supersonic flight. So, for those of you for whom this is a new experience, welcome to the supersonic age. Oh, good afternoon again, everybody. Captain Gunton once more. The elapsed time clock on the flight deck shows 3 hours and 20 minutes. That's our time from opening the throttles at New York to turning off the runway here at London Heathrow. It has been our pleasure having you on board. Hope you've enjoyed the flight and that we'll see you again in the future on one of our Concorde flights.
Now, whether 3.5 hours of that experience was really worth the price of a used Honda is debatable. But lots of things start out very expensive, then get popular. Demand drives supply, luxury becomes necessity, necessity begets invention, and pretty soon we're all experiencing the passenger jet of the future. Instead, the Concorde is headed for various aviation museums to be experienced as a 20th century dinosaur. Henry Petroski, engineering professor and author of Histories of Ordinary Things, Pencils, Paperclips, also Bridges, and now a grab bag of items in a book called Small Things Considered. Henry Petroski once flew on the Concorde and joins us from Durham, North Carolina. Professor Petroski, how is it that in those aviation history exhibits, the other retired aircraft will be those that gave way to faster, sleeker aircraft, but Concorde actually succumbed to slower, clunkier planes?
Well, technology is complicated, and it exists in a context of society and culture. In the case of the Concorde, because of the noise that it made taking off, also with its sonic boom, of course, the communities over which it flew were not very tolerant of it. It was only able to use a small number of airports on a regular basis, and it was not economically viable.
In the annals of invention, how common is it for an item that outperformed its competitors to turn into a dead branch on the evolutionary tree of engineering?
Oh, it's fairly common. There was a case in the middle of the 19th century of a steamship, the Great Eastern, that was so large that it was able to carry all the coal it needed to sail from England to Australia. The fact of the matter is, though, that once the ship was finished and began to sail around the world, it found that there were very few harbors that were able to accommodate it. The QE2, which was, of course, the second Queen Elizabeth steamship, was actually smaller than the first Queen Elizabeth in order to fit into the Panama Canal locks. It's not uncommon for there to be retreats in technology.
The Concorde started flying across the Atlantic really just a couple of years, or a few years, after the first jumbo jets, the 747s, began flying across the Atlantic, taking a lot more time but carrying a lot more passengers and making a lot less noise. Their descendants are still around. I just wonder, do you assume that there will be some return of the Concorde or something like it that will get us back to that race for the fastest crossing, or have we just given up on the idea of crossing the Atlantic in 3.5 hours?
Well, no, I think it will come back. I think, for example, there could be technological advances that would make the airplane quieter, that would remove a lot of the political objections to it flying over populated areas. Or people might become more tolerant of noise.
I wonder whether the transatlantic route, whether the difference of well, it's a few hours that you're knocking off the trip by going on the Concorde, but I wonder if that was significant enough, whether it would have made more sense to cross the Pacific or to go from, you know, Johannesburg to JFK instead, a really long flight that might be made shorter.
Well, of course, then you come up with the problem, can you carry enough fuel to make those long flights? And that is a limitation.
So there are a few problems here that have to work out to have made this thing work.
Well, yes, all technology is complicated. It might be a decade, it might be several decades, but I think there's no question that eventually we will again fly faster than the speed of sound.
Henry Petrosky, thanks for talking with us once again.
Well, thank you.
Henry Petrosky, professor of civil engineering and history at Duke University, spoke to us from Durham, North Carolina.